Three ridiculous men, one beautiful game. Some Canadian guys talking about soccer.
All right, hello everyone, and thanks for listening to the Some Canadian Guys Talking About Soccer podcast. This is Daniel Squizzato, a.k.a. Squiz, and I'm joined by my two fellow writers, fellow podcasters, and fellow Canadian guys. First, a fellow who has bronchitis and ain't got time for that, but thankfully he's got time for us, writer at CanadianSoccerNews.com, Grant Surridge. Grant, how are you?
Just got back from getting a cold pop.
Yeah? How are you feeling now?
Excellent.
Good stuff. Also with us, a man who is a lifelong apologist for King Bowser Koopa. He's also a soccer writer for Sportsnet.ca and senior editor at Sportsnet Magazine, Jamie Doyle. Jamie, how are you?
I'm all right. And I just want to point out, nobody can see this, but Squiz is currently wearing a flat cap backwards, which makes him look vaguely...
I just noticed that, too.
Looks vaguely like an early 90s comedian.
Leave my bebopping and scatting ways out of this. You are clearly attempting to deflect attention away from your lifelong support for Bowser.
That's a Nintendo reference, I take it. I wasn't allowed to have a Nintendo when I was a kid, so...
What?
It was all lost on me.
I wasn't allowed to watch Roseanne.
What?
Well, you heard me.
So, wait, no, Grant first. Why?
I think my parents just felt it was not something I should be watching. I don't know.
You'd end up like John Goodman.
I guess they just didn't feel Roseanne Barr was a good sort of role model.
I think that's fair.
Well, thankfully, nothing's changed there. Jamie, like, were you a Sega Genesis kid instead?
No. I think this was more a, we're not going to buy you one of these, as opposed to, it's immoral and you shouldn't have it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you actually have no opinion on Bowser, despite my intro there.
I got nothing.
Jamie, you're breaking the fourth wall. People are going to realize it's all made up at the beginning.
I'm a Bowser neutral.
I took my hat off there to remove that distraction so that we can let you know what's coming up on this week's show. We will get into the Voyageurs Cup, looking back at the semifinals last night and looking ahead.
Wouldn't that be great if we actually got into the Voyageurs Cup?
Jamie, we've been talking about this every week.
No, I mean, like,
you work on that crossing leg.
We start our own team.
Yeah.
Like a team of three guys in the Voyageurs
Well,
Cup.
We build it up to, you
SCGFC.
Know, at least 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get, I don't know, players who are good.
Uh-huh.
And then we become subs.
Yeah.
Job done.
Yeah.
Wait, I've got a better plan.
Yeah, as long as
we need
at least 14 so we can, you know.
We all move to Fort McMurray, become oil barons, have lots of money, and then just buy any players we want, enter them in the Voyageurs Cup, and then we can forget about these trifling teams we have now.
I think if we knew how to make money, we wouldn't be here right now.
Well, what do you mean?
I definitely agree with that.
We wouldn't have gone to journalism school, I'll tell you that much.
I just told you how to make money. From what I've been told...
I'll just be an oil baron.
Step one, move to Fort McMurray. Step two, ? Step three, profit. Just make sure that you don't drive on Highway 63.
There's money in the railroads. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know what... I think the time period you're referencing is one in which the hat I'm wearing would have been stylistically appropriate. Anyway, the Voyageurs Cup semifinals last night. We're going to look back at those and look ahead at next week and the week after final. We're going to look at the host cities for the 2015 Women's World Cup. We're not going to look at the cities, but we're going to talk about who is going to host the final of that prestigious tournament. We will talk about whether or not Aaron Vinter has bought himself some more time at Toronto FC and whether this can be a turning point for that team. Helping us in that regard will be Toronto Sun columnist Curtis Larson coming back to the show. We will play you some audio from a conference call done by newly elected Canadian Soccer Association President Victor Montaliani earlier this week. Talk a little bit about his experience and his vision for Canadian soccer. Later on in the show, in promotion relegation, we will hit on such topics as GMs, BS, and WCQ. And stay tuned, as always, except when we don't do it, for Taste the Trivia. But before any of that, So let's just get into it. The Voyageurs Cup, Grant.
Yes.
It took place last night, the semifinals. There were two games, Toronto FC, a rather chippy affair, as the people would say, against the Montreal Impact, a 2-0 victory to take the win on aggregate.
Yep.
Vancouver Whitecaps, an eventual 3-1 win over FC Edmonton, taking that tie on aggregate for the fourth straight year. It's going to be Toronto FC against the Vancouver Whitecaps for the Canadian Championship. So let's look back before we can look forward, because we must look backward, not forward. Wait.
Downward, not upward.
It
and,
works.
And ever swirling away from freedom. Grant, what'd you think of those games last night?
I thought the Toronto FC game was kind of interesting because a performance like that, when you go a man down and you manage to sort of battle out and win the game and get the victory and advance in the tournament, can really sort of, I mean, that really can be a turning point for a team's season. However, I think maybe it's a bit too late for the turning point, which is really unfortunate.
So that
in terms of like their league play.
So in your mind then, at this point, they've got the Canadian Championship, they've got the CONCACAF Champions League, and that's all they can be focusing on? Except, of course, for the Liverpool friendly, the game of the summer.
I didn't say that. Okay. I'm not necessarily sure they're going to beat Vancouver.
Then they'll focus on the next two games, and then they'll have nothing.
If this would have happened maybe like four league games ago, that would have been really good.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of the performance itself, if not necessarily the result, I mean, we've seen them play like this. I mean, the game against Salt Lake in Salt Lake a couple weeks ago was a heartbreaker, not because they played poorly, but because they played well and just happened to concede right at the last minute. So, Jamie, I don't know, are you buying what Grant's selling here?
Kind of, but I mean,
I'll give you a discount.
How do you get a discount on zero?
You're selling me nothing here. The fact that they were playing with 10 men is the biggest bonus, I'd say, because like their goals weren't...
Remove Richard Eckersley and you get plus 500.
That seems to be the case, actually. Nothing against Richard Eckersley, but maybe they should always have 10 men on the field. But the thing is, like, their goals weren't... These weren't golazos. I mean, the one was deflected in, the other one was a kind of a scrappy second effort. And they got lucky not to concede. Justin Mapp hit the bar. It wasn't like an overwhelming performance, but the fact that they were down to 10 men makes it a very good performance. But they also blew a bunch of chances to really put the game away at the end. Now, granted, I mean, Montreal had pushed way forward, and Toronto FC broke in numbers like 2-on-1, 3-on-2 a couple of times and just couldn't score again, which, you know, confidence in their scoring abilities without Danny Kuvermans is not exactly high, and we don't know when he's coming back.
Yeah, so. But saying that they blew chances, I mean, people have a tendency to say any time that a goal isn't scored, they blew the opportunity.
Yes, that's right.
You do have to give some credit to a guy who always seems to play very well at BMO Field, tracking back to 4 years ago, Donovan Ricketts in goal for Montreal. A couple of the chances at the end, I think it was Jeremy Hall had a strike from about 25 yards. Ricketts got his fingertips to just the wide-open chance that Ryan Johnson had that Ricketts cut down
the angle on. But then there's also, like, Torsten Frings had a good chance, and he managed to hit Nick Soelsma. I mean, it's just the finishing wasn't quite there. And when you're one-on-one with the keeper, it's more on you if it doesn't. If you're the striker, it's more the striker's fault than the keeper doing exceptionally well.
Maybe we should also be talking about how shockingly disappointment the performance was on the part of the Montreal Impact.
Yeah, this is what I was going to say because it is.
That's very true.
It's always alarming in MLS, a league. You know, we talk about the fact that it's built on parity, which makes it so surprising that Toronto could get out to a start with 8 straight losses. But Montreal, playing the way they did against Toronto last night, is especially surprising given the fact that they went into Kansas City over the weekend, this vaunted KC team that looked unbeatable for the first few weeks of the season, and defeated them 2-0. So, I mean, Grant, do you read anything into this? Is this a matter of, you know, like different priorities, or is it just a matter of that's the way North American soccer is going to be for the time being, and that
I think that's the way all soccer can be sometimes. I mean, teams just kind of come out and for whatever reason play like crap. I mean, I don't know what else we can chalk that up to. I think it was about 10 minutes after TFC had their players sent off, they were dominating the game. You don't really see that very often.
No, we don't.
No, you don't.
So, I don't know how you would explain that.
Senica Ubiperipovic had an especially bad game, and it just seems like he got into a lot of good spaces and then took 7 touches to give the ball away when he should have taken 1 and shot.
Well, as someone who made the trip to Montreal in the Toronto FC caravan a couple weeks ago to see their MLS match, and having seen Ubiperipovic come over to the Toronto FC supporters section and taunt them after scoring his goal, and I'm not particularly sad about a less than stellar performance.
This is one reason why Montreal couldn't take advantage of Toronto FC's man down.
The other thing is Montreal seemed to look a bit better after Bernier came off in the second half.
Yeah, that's not encouraging.
No.
Well, from a Canadian national team fan standpoint.
From a Canadian content
perspective. Yeah, but on the other side of things, you saw, you know, a Toronto FC back line with a couple of promising young Canadians, Ashton Morgan and Daniil Henry, both putting in some good performances.
And, you did.
And Kurt Larson's going to talk to us a little bit more about that a little bit later on. But why don't we just move in quickly to the other semifinal, then we'll look ahead to the final. We spoke to Sean Sako of FC Edmonton on our last week's show. He got the Some Canadian Guys bump, as it were. He went out on the weekend, scored the first hat trick of his career. And he said that his boys were going to go put in a workmanlike performance in Vancouver. They took the lead. They went up 1-0 on Vancouver in the, I believe, 54th minute. And they were, you know, just one more goal away from tying things on aggregate. Vancouver eventually managed to overpower the NASL squad towards the end of the game. Took it 3-1, took the tie 5-1 on aggregate. But anything to say about the performance that Vancouver put in last night and what we can expect from them going ahead to the Voyageurs Cup final, which gets going next Wednesday?
It was kind of the opposite of the atmosphere around the Toronto-Montreal game, I think. Vancouver probably had a bit of malaise and were thinking, well, this one's kind of sealed. We've got two away goals. And then came out pretty sluggish. And then when it mattered, they stepped up and took over the tie completely. So I don't know how up for this game they were, and I think it's not really an indication of how up they're going to be for the final.
Do you think, though, that, I mean, there was some question about the way in which the tournament was structured this year and that there was confusion about how the teams would be ranked because Montreal was coming into MLS, but they finished below Edmonton in the NASL standings last year. And some people think that the CSA kind of said, well, you know what, we have Toronto, Montreal, we have Vancouver, Edmonton. In terms of the way Canadian geography works, those will be regional rivalries, and hopefully those will spark some interest. First leg of Toronto v. Montreal was dire, but we saw a lot of that fire and passion coming out in the game last night. And as well, Vancouver against Edmonton, we saw a large number of Vancouver fans make the trip to Edmonton for the first leg, and a lot of interest amongst the, you know, the folks in Edmonton for this tournament and for this tie. So is this a good sign insofar as we can have regional rivalries in a country as large as Canada? Is the fact that it does seem to be taking root on both sides of the country strike you as a positive thing, Grant?
Definitely. I mean, you look at Canadian football, they've always sort of thrived on...
like throw pointy ball, hand egg football.
Yes, Canadian, yeah. Canadian-American football. I don't know how else to describe it. They've always thrived on having those regional rivalries, right? And I mean, you know, that's kind of actually, if you think about it, and I just did think about it, it's sort of a good example because there's only eight teams, right? There's only eight teams in the Canadian Football League, which, I mean, for the time being, that's the kind of the number of teams we're going to be faced with in the Voyageurs Cup, hopefully, eventually.
Well, Ottawa's going to get back in the show. We'll have nine teams in the CFL, five teams in the Canadian Championship / Voyageurs Cup.
Well, right. That's the thing. I mean, you're building up these regional rivalries, and there's always a debate about how they're going to structure the Voyageurs Cup. But it doesn't really matter because you keep adding in new teams. The rivalry is going to be less important because it's not going to be Vancouver against Edmonton every time, and it's not going to be Montreal against Toronto.
Yeah, but
you're
going
to have to mix
it
up with an odd number of teams.
If you had sort of four or five teams coming from the West, for example, you can have rivalries built up amongst those teams.
You're pushing for a Winnipeg team.
We'll have Vancouver and Edmonton.
The Winnipeg Grants.
Yeah, the Winnipeg Grants. We'll also have Some Canadian Guys FC based in Fort McMurray, Alberta. So that's four teams right off the hop. Get a team in Calgary, and there's your five. We're all set. Although our Saskatchewan listeners will be upset that I just excluded them. So Saskatoon Celtic FC can join things as well. You got to just get the funding together first of all.
Prince Albert 1860.
Here we go.
I don't want to hear your thoughts on a Prince Albert, Grant.
Since we're
talking about different regions of the country, let's get into the worst kept secret in Canadian soccer, which was finally made official last Friday with an assist from Mr. Sepp Blatter. The host cities for the 2015 Women's World Cup were officially announced. They were, of course, Vancouver, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Ottawa, Montreal, and Moncton. As I said, no surprises there. We knew Toronto was not going to be involved, and that, we should clarify for those who are still unclear about this, was not a CSA decision. That was a Tourism Toronto decision because of the 2015 Pan Am Games.
The CSA actually begged Toronto to change their mind, but Toronto being Toronto, these days it chose to make some questionable decisions.
Yeah. Jamie, were you like going to say something political and then pulled back from it?
Yeah, man. I don't want to be political. I don't want to go down that road.
Stop spying on me, Jamie. But anyway, we've got Vancouver, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Ottawa, Montreal, and Moncton. Looking at these six cities, I'm going to pose the question to both of you. Where is the final going to be held?
It was like a Where's Waldo.
Yeah. Grant, what do you think?
Right there behind the duck. well, it was funny when you asked me about this earlier in preparation for this show.
We don't prepare for this show.
No, whatever.
Who are you trying to kid?
In the mini preparation for the show. It sort of got me thinking about how there's really nowhere that we don't really have a good stadium in Canada to host a proper final.
Well, we will. I mean, the Stade Saputo, when it's done, will be a perfectly reasonable place.
No, I'm talking about a big, like, 75,000
We don't have an Olympia stadium or, you know.
We do have an Olympic stadium. Unfortunately, you know, I mean, three years from now, the chunks of concrete will be falling at an even faster pace than they are now.
Just make things more complicated on the pitch.
But could it be
faster and look up?
Could it be at the Big O in Montreal?
But I mean, this is my point. I mean, you have the Big O, you have Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton, and you have BC Place. None of which are really great for.
No, I'd say it's got to go. It's got to be BC Place.
Yeah, I mean,
They did well with the women's qualifying tournament. It can be a bigger arena than or a bigger stadium than they use it for Whitecaps if they take the
semi
roof off. There.
You know, I mean, Vancouver's got the global profile having just hosted the Olympics. They seem to be becoming a bit of a home base for the Canadian women's national team. You know, the training camp out there. Mm-hmm. It was the home base for the women's national team for a large number of years. And so, you know, I think this was a question that kind of we all knew the answer to ahead of time. I think we can agree that barring anything unusual happening, the finals in Vancouver.
Is there any kind of requirement for the number of seats the stadium has to have to host the final match?
Well, I would think FIFA would have looked into that ahead of time. I mean, they're not going to give the tournament to a place that they know is not going to have a stadium that has a sufficient number of seats.
Zimbabwe. In my mind, it has to be either BC Place, Commonwealth Stadium, or Olympic Stadium in Montreal. I don't think the other three cities have stadiums that are big enough.
No, I mean
there's going to be that new stadium.
The new
in Winnipeg,
CFL stadium in Winnipeg,
Memorial Stadium.
Yeah, it's kind of open air, and I think it's what 35,000 seats,
something like that. Yeah, I mean they can bring it up to 40-something
just did whatever it was $400-500 million worth of renovations on BC Place. Like there's no way you put the final anywhere other than there, right? Mm-hmm. I'm the Moncton guy, so as much as I'd like to see the final at Stade Moncton. I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think Moncton would even be comfortable with that. That's just too much. Not for us, thanks. Just a group game.
You're just like, no. We got the tournament. We thumbed one in Halifax's eye. That's all we need. We're good. Give us some games, and
too many people poking around in our business here.
That's a strange way.
I think Olympic Stadium, just the kind of the state of it. I've actually never seen it myself firsthand, but from everything I've read, I've never been
from Saputo.
I've seen it from.
That's probably a safe distance.
Yes. Are we also that
it's like that big rock in Australia? You can only look at from far away.
That's one other question. I mean, do games get put at the Olympic Stadium? I mean, during the 2007 World Cup, the U20 World Cup, rather, we saw games at Olympic Stadium. But by 2015, a few more years of existence. Of Olympic Stadium,
and they've also got spanking new Saputo Stadium. Why would you play?
Well, 20,000 seats for a tournament like the Women's World Cup. I mean, that's going to describe a number of the venues, but. I don't know. We'll see. But given that turf, it's not going to get our hopes up. One thing I did want to mention is we're on the subject of women's soccer. Tonight, Thursday night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, the Canadian under-17 women's team can clinch a berth in this year's U17 Women's World Cup. They're going up against Mexico. A win there sends them to the tournament. It's the third edition of the tournament. Canada's been there both of the other two times. This year, it is taking place in Azerbaijan. Jamie, what is the capital?
Baku.
That was not prepared at all. He just knew that. Taking place in September and October. So good luck to our ladies/girls tonight.
I love the lesser tournaments like this.
Oh, wait,
this.
You
I
have mean, my for, notes. You did prepare. Damn
no,
it.
I saw that. I just saw this now. But I mean, I did, and also you don't have written down the capital. But it doesn't matter. These, like the lower age group World Cups always seem to be just in the most ridiculous kind of places. Where it's just like, now the U20 World Cup in, I don't know, Lesotho.
The U20, was it the U20 Women's World Cup, I believe, was going to be in Uzbekistan.
Exactly.
Until FIFA realized, hey, wait a minute, what? And then it then they moved it to Japan, which kind
no,
of
but I mean they
sense.
Still have a, like a tournament in Azerbaijan, and then mostly people are
why,
just
wait
like,
a minute,
okay.
Why can't Uzbekistan host a football tournament?
I'm not saying there's anything intrinsically there. I'm saying that they demonstrably cannot, as in they got hosting duties taken away from them by FIFA.
Yeah. Oh, okay. As in they literally could not.
Yes, they were slated to host it, and FIFA said, no.
It's like they've got a big map at the FIFA headquarters, and they just put a pin on every country that's hosted a tournament until they get to the end, and then they take all the pins off and start over again.
Well, I'd say that on that map that FIFA has, there are probably a few little oil rigs that are drawn on, and that may help them direct where those pins go. You know,
exactly.
Well, you know, Canada has oil, Russia has oil, Qatar has oil.
Azerbaijan has oil.
I'm sure Azerbaijan has oil. Maybe Uzbekistan didn't have enough oil. Mm. Anyway, one little odd fact about the qualifying tournament in CONCACAF for the U-17 Women's World Cup. Both of the top two scorers in this tournament are named Summer. Summer Green of the U.S. has 9 goals, and Summer Clark of Canada has 6. There you go.
Something to think about for a couple seconds.
It's the summer of summer. Anyway, I just wanted to get that out there. We are now going to play some audio we have from earlier this week. Victor Montaliani, new president of the Canadian Soccer Association, addressing the national media. Some of his thoughts. The audio is a bit difficult to hear. We apologize for that. But right off the hop, it's him responding to a question about a bit of a reputation that he has as, quote, a soccer guy, and him talking about his business experience and then getting into a little bit about his vision for Canadian soccer. So this is the new CSA president from earlier this week.
Well, first of all, I'm actually proud of that moniker. After all, this is the Canadian Soccer Association. So the soccer guy connotates passion and love for the game, and I'll take that any day of the week. But yeah, of course, you know, my background, which, you know, was, I don't know if it was overlooked or conveniently overlooked. You know, I've had 21 years experience in corporate Canada, working, owning my own businesses, being a partner in a firm, multinational firm or a boutique firm. I've done businesses all over the world, South America, Europe, North America. So, and you know, along the way, I picked up, you know, obviously my educational background is pretty vast as well. So, my background is pretty extensive on the business side of things, and I know how to read a financial statement like anybody else that's in business. So. I might have been overlooked conveniently, which is fine, fair enough, but for those of people that know me, that deal with me, they know that my sort of experience on the corporate and business side is as extensive, if not more so, than on the football side. You know, one of the things that I've only been at the CSA for 6 years, even my soccer experience at the executive level, I did a couple years at the provincial level, but I didn't really, spend a lot of time in your standard soccer experience in Canada, you know, districts and clubs, like a lot of people. So I have no experience in that. So I went from being a player to a businessman into this level pretty much. But what I found is that one of the things I find too often with Canadian soccer, and I don't mean just the CSA, is that too many of our structures have an institutional mentality, sort of like the government, and that doesn't translate well to the fast pace of international football, and in terms of how decisions have to be made. So I think what we need to do is change the culture so that we are a much more entrepreneurial type of organization, where decisions are made not only in a consistent fashion and transparent fashion, but in an efficient fashion. Part of that is ensuring that operations and governance are separated so that our senior staff is able to make decisions and are supported in those decisions by not only myself as the president, but the board. And that way they can make decisions on a much more efficient manner and not worry about being handcuffed by, $3 million committees. And so I think that's how you change the culture, is surrounding yourself with professionals that can provide the sort of ability to make those decisions on an efficient manner.
So it is up to us now to weigh in on what the new president has said. Jamie, there was a part of that interview as well, or that conference call, I should say, that the audio wasn't really usable. I think there were.
It sounded like he was at a rave.
There were pots and pans.
I was going to congratulate the CSA on holding the first ever press conference from outer space.
Yeah, but that's
now joining us first ever from the International Space Station, Victor Montaliani.
Maybe that's where the Women's World Cup final will be held, at Canada's new space stadium.
There's no oil up there, Jamie. You actually asked a question after this finished about the reliance upon player fees, and he spoke about the idea that he wants the CSA to double its operating budget within 8 years, but that the quickest route to revenue is on-field success, and that it's up to the CSA to put the building blocks in place to help facilitate that on-field success. So looking at that element of it, or anything that he said in that clip we heard there, what kind of impression are you getting from the newly elected CSA president?
Who
you endorsed all along, by the way, right, Jamie?
Well, it doesn't matter. Nobody listens to my endorsements, even me. The one thing I'll add to what he was saying about in response to my question about doubling the CSA's operating budget, if this on-field success happens and by some stroke of ridiculous luck the Canadian men's national team qualifies for the World Cup, they get, I think it's around a $10 million windfall from FIFA for qualifying for the World Cup, which is roughly 50% of their current operating budget. So, I mean, when you talk about success breeds success, if some success gives you another 50% of your budget.
Well, there you go, Jamie. He said in 8 years, you double your operating budget. You know, World Cup's every 4 years. If
you
just bank yourself on making that World Cup, boom, you're set to go. Grant, any thoughts on what the newly elected president had to say there?
I just kind of thought it was funny how he you know, was happy to be known as the soccer guy, as if he felt he kind of needed to explain that or something.
Well, it's kind of funny the way that these sorts of things get going. I mean, when it comes to that narrative existing, I mean, I think that the three of us are as culpable as anybody in propagating that idea. But I mean, it's not to say that the other candidates weren't soccer guys, or that Montaliani is, you know, exclusively and aggressively only interested in the game. Obviously, he's a businessman with diverse background.
And the idea that, like, a guy who's a vice president of the CSA and has been so for 12 years is somehow not a soccer guy. He's just kind of completely unaware of the sport is a bit silly.
Yeah, I would imagine that anybody involved at this level is a soccer guy.
Although, but, you know.
Well, what I will say, this morning on Twitter, I saw Nick Bontis, who is a recently appointed member of the CSA board, the Ontario regional representative. He just kind of decided he was responding to what someone else had written about the structure of U11 games and the fact that it didn't make sense that they were playing on full fields. They should play 9v9. He's like, full fields are too big for those kids. And I'm like, yeah, it's very nice to see somebody who's a member of the CSA board of directors now, obviously with a keen interest and an accurate insight to provide on the game at that level. Not that it's the board's responsibility to be involved in the nitty-gritty like that. Grant, I mean, that's one of the things that Montaliani talked about.
I don't want to get into a protracted technical argument here, but I think what Canada soccer needs at that level, I think, is just longer legs.
That's all the kids need. Just hit your growth spurts earlier, and we'll be fine. Grant,
that's what Germany does.
To close things up, Grant, he was talking there about separating governance from the day-to-day operations, essentially hiring the people, putting the people in the right places to implement programs like long-term player development, to run the teams, to look after the players, and leave the president and the board of directors to take care of the high-level governance stuff and not meddle in the day-to-day affairs. We can't say yet whether or not that will come to fruition, but in theory, I would imagine you think that that's a good idea and a good way forward.
Well, it's like the separation of church and state.
In what way?
No, yeah. I think it's
in that it's theoretically the way that things work, but in reality, we have a guy like Mitt Romney running for president.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, okay. We don't live in the United States.
And Mitt Romney's not president of the CSA. We'll make that very clear.
Yes, Mitt Romney was not on the ballot for CSA president.
He is not a soccer guy.
No, Mitt Romney, not a soccer
not
guy.
Not a soccer guy.
Well, as we discussed last week, he probably thinks it's just an outpost for weirdos and foreigners. So
that's true. And Barack Obama is something of a soccer guy, or at least presented himself slightly as that in the last World Cup.
How so?
There was like clips of him kind of playing soccer, and
what do you mean clips of him kind of playing soccer?
Like, he was with kids, and he was
there
just
was
kind
a
of
ball nearby.
He, yeah, no, he was at,
his
was
leg
at, some,
at it every few seconds.
He was at some kind of photo op kids game, and he kind of, you know, dribbled the ball a little bit and kicked it to them, and then he was at the
so he's
the
a soccer
World
guy
thing.
Based on one photo op.
Yeah, yeah, you know, take what you
yeah,
can get.
George Bush took a photo op inside a inside a fighter, a jet. He's a fighter pilot now.
Well, he actually was a fighter.
Yeah, who is interestingly a really big soccer guy is Henry Kissinger.
Really?
He's a huge soccer fan.
He was born in Europe, though, wasn't he?
Oh, there we go.
All back That's to what this I'm whole
Euro
yeah.
snub.
He was born in Europe, so he must like it. Barack Obama taking photo ops with young girls, you know, little girls playing the game.
That also, those he was,
and he was born in
he
Kenya.
Was born in
so,
Kenya, you know.
There you go.
Well, that's not Europe. Wait, let me check a map. I'll use that FIFA map. I'll find out what's where. Jamie, capital of Kenya?
Nairobi.
Well, that's an easy one. Capital of wherever Henry Kissinger is from.
I don't really know where Henry Kissinger is from.
Grant, where's Henry Kissinger from?
I'm going to say Germany or Switzerland. I'm not sure.
Wow.
I don't think that's true. I think it's further east, like Romania.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Bulgaria.
No, it doesn't matter.
Did you ever find those glasses that he dropped in the toilet? I hope he
you
did.
Know, of course, that's what I was thinking in my mind. But
I was
I'm
just
like,
waiting to give you the excuse to bring that
the
up.
The Simpsons way too much.
All right.
All right, fair enough. Let's get back to some soccer talk, which of course means that we'll absolve ourselves of having to do it and bring on a guest who is going to tell us a little bit more about Toronto FC's performance last night and whether or not that game represents a turning point in their heretofore difficult season. Kurt Larson of the Toronto Sun after this. Joining us now on the line from Toronto, Ontario, Toronto Sun columnist Kurt Larson. Well, Kurt, welcome back to the show.
Hey, how's it going, boys?
It's going all right. We're here in Toronto, being able to say for the first time in a long time, Toronto FC actually won last night. 2-0 victory over Montreal. Spent most of the game down a man after an early sending off, but you were at the game, you covered the game. What are your overall thoughts on their performance last night?
The thing that sticks out, first of all, is that it probably buys Aaron Winter a little more time. That said, let me just be the first one to point out that I was one of the only ones that really kind of stood up for his tactics in the first leg in Montreal. That 0-0 draw, that was probably one of the worst soccer matches we've seen in recent history from and between two MLS teams. But it set it up nicely for the return leg, and the early goal from Reggie Lamb really, I think, lifted the club, and they really started with a different kind of energy than we've seen in the last few weeks. Some people after the match attributed it to, the meetings they had during the week. They had closed door meetings to kind of discuss the 8 straight league losses, and really came out and no one really had a bad game other than Eckersley, who it was lucky not to really hurt the Reds early on after taking that advantage.
Well, you said that it hurt them in terms of Richard Eckersley getting the red card in the 16th minute, but having watched the game, honestly, I had kind of forgotten by the second half that they were down a man. What are your thoughts on that actual red card given out to Richard Eckersley there? I saw earlier today on Twitter you were having a bit of a disagreement with some Toronto FC fans about the accuracy of that call.
Well, I mean, as an unbiased spectator, somebody that is an independent source. To me, it looks like Eckersley goes in with kind of a stamping motion. And people said that that it was Ubi Paripovic, the guy that Eckersley fouled, I guess you could say, came in late with a challenge and that Eckersley couldn't avoid putting his foot down. But different TV angles, you can't just watch the online version on TorontoFC.ca. If you go back, if you PVR the game, the different angles shows that he kind of comes in with a stamping motion and his leg is way too high. And I'm not convinced it wasn't out of malice. The two were jawing early in the match, from all indications. So I think Eckersley kind of knew what he was doing there.
Now, we definitely did see a lot of passion and a lot of aggressiveness come out on the field between these two teams that we didn't necessarily see in the first leg or in their first MLS matchup of the season. It kind of culminated at the end with a bit of a jaw-jacking between Toronto assistant Bob DeClercq and Montreal head coach Jesse Marsh. Was there anything in particular that you saw that sparked that incident, or was it kind of just, as I said, the culmination of what was a bit of a testy match?
Yeah, I think a bit of all of that. I mean, I think it's good for the tie, right? I think it's good for the kind of the rivalry we're trying to build here, if not a little bit artificially between a club in its first year. But
it's not any more artificial than a rivalry between Toronto and Columbus, Ohio.
True, but I think leading up to the game, Jesse Marsh was kind of the diplomat, kind of, giving the interviews in response to some of the things Aaron Winter's been saying the last few weeks, the that we're going to surprise Montreal. We're better than Montreal. And this is coming from a club that's 0-8, so it's kind of saying something when you're saying that about a team that is significantly higher than you in the standings. But, you know, Jesse was very diplomatic until the end of the match, where apparently he just refused to shake Aaron's hand, and Bob DeFork didn't like that too much and kind of got in his face and had to be separated.
So I guess the big question for Toronto FC fans is this a new beginning? Is this the turning of the tide from a team that has no wins in the league? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think it's been coming. I mean, I think it's a little bit unjust to say Toronto doesn't deserve points right now in the league. Sure, they've been underwhelming, and they've kind of been the architects of their own demise. But to a certain extent, they've been the better team at least two or three, maybe even four games, and deserve points by now. Whether this is the turning point, well, you see what happens when you eliminate the mistakes at the back. So if they can keep doing that and keep it solid, then, you know, they could pick up some points here in the next month. But, you know, it's too early to say. They go to Vancouver next week, and you know, a loss there, then I think everybody turns against Aaron Winter once again.
Yeah, but then they just have to hope for a thunderstorm in the second leg, and that'll help everything, help right the ship a little bit. You talk about the back line there and some of the mistakes being corrected. One of the players that got a lot of plaudits for his performance last night was Daniil Henry playing at center back. What did you think of his performance?
Very good in the air. I think the combo of him and Ken really kind of, and coaches for that, were really kind of resolute at the back in those clearances, you know, giving up those goals on the restarts this year. Has really sunk them in a lot of their league matches. Also, what struck me was his composure on the ball. I mean, not really turning over too many balls in bad places, which has been a problem for Toronto's backs all year. So what comes to mind when you think of Donnell is a guy that's playing way above his years. I mean, 19 years old. I think the U23s helped him a lot. And I don't think there's any reason why we won't see him back there until he shows us otherwise.
Well, you say until, you know, let's be optimistic and say if he shows us otherwise. You know, we don't have to, you know, presume right off the bat that things will crash and burn, although it's Toronto FC, so we've seen 5 years of that. Want to get your thoughts on a couple of other players that saw a little bit of playing time there. Jeremy Hall, who's finding his way into the Toronto FC lineup finally after recovering from an injury, as well as Nick Soelsma coming back after being out for a number of weeks with an injury of his own. They both saw a little bit of playing time on Wednesday night. What did you think of the performance that the two of them turned in?
Well, I think you see what happens when you bring in fresh players and you have quality fresh players on the bench that can come in and punish a team that's really tired from a midweek contest. I mean, Montreal is coming off a midweek game in Kansas City, a game which they played very well, but you could see towards the end of the match they were laboring a bit. So, you know, to have Hall and Soelsma coming off the bench, guys that they didn't have previously due to injury, you saw them getting forward and really should have scored a few goals. As for Hall, I think the difference maker of the two, it's excellent now to have somebody that can come in and maybe give Eckersley a blow, or when Eckersley gets sent off like that, to have someone come in that can provide immediate cover for you at a variety of spots. So, coming into the season, we weren't too sure what we were going to see from Hall, but all indication is that Winter likes him, and he's really versatile, so he's a great guy to have on the bench.
And some of the strongest performances that we've seen the team turn in this year have been in non-league play. I mean, I'm thinking of the game on the road against LA in the Champions League, the game at home against Santos Laguna, the game last night against Montreal in the Canadian Championship, and yet the team still sits at 0-0-8 in MLS regular season play. Is there anything to be said about that dichotomy between the performances they've turned in the Canadian Championship and CONCACAF Champions League versus the league? Is it just, as you said a bit earlier on, and as Aaron Vinter has said, a bit of bad luck that they've been snake-bitten, not getting the luck turning their way? Or I mean, is there anything we can attribute to this other than just the soccer gods not smiling on them in MLS play this year?
Well, I think you see it's a team that steps up to the occasion when there's a lot on the line. So, you know, that opening game against LA, it's not hard to get up for that match. And then going there and trying to get a victory, it's not hard to get up for that one either. And, of course, Santos Laguna at home, you know, who's not going to be up for it? So I'm not sure what the deal is. I mean, is it a case of motivation for the league? I'm not sure. You'd think not after starting so poorly. But as you said, I think they've turned in some good results in the league, or not some good results, but some good performances in the league, and have been unlucky at times. So, that's an issue for the dressing room.
Another big game coming up next week. Their next match is going to be the first leg of the Voyageurs Cup final for the fourth year running against the Vancouver Whitecaps in the final after Vancouver defeated Edmonton in the other semifinal last night. How are you seeing that turning out to this point? Is that going to be an evenly matched game, or what are you expecting from the Voyageurs Cup final?
Well, it's interesting because you don't know how Winter is going to approach that match. Is he going to go in and sit back and play that same boring defensive game that got him a needed result in Montreal, or is he going to come out and use the, you know, the attacking form the club seems to be in right now and go after a result? But if you're looking at Vancouver's performance last night, really underwhelming until late on when they managed to get back through two late on. So, you know, probably pretty straight up, probably pretty cagey, and I think there's going to be a lot to play for in the return leg in Toronto a week later.
We've seen a player like Ryan Johnson get a lot of minutes logged on early in the season here. Reggie Lamb getting a lot more minutes. He's scored a few goals for the team as well. But the one player that you would think is going to be counted on to score goals for Toronto going forward based on his status and based on his contract is Danny Kuvermans. What can you tell us about his current status as it relates to his injury and how close he might be to returning to this team?
Danny left training a few weeks ago with a groin injury, and all indication was that he was going to be back even for the DC match on the weekend. But it appears he kind of had a little setback because he was back in full training a week ago, and then prior to the DC game, he was along the sidelines doing his own fitness work and actually left the training pitch early, a bit frustrated and hobbled. So his status is a bit unknown right now. I think it's possible we could see him back for Vancouver as a sub possibly. But as of right now, there's no injury update on him. But like you said, it's important that he gets back because Toronto really hasn't found that second reliable scorer yet, unless you consider Reggie Lamb, who has, I think, 3 goals this year reliable. So right now, no update on him other than a groin, and he's racing for fitness.
Last question, Kurt. Last time we had you on the show, it was kind of a preseason preview. We asked you to pick your winner for the Voyageurs Cup. At the time, you picked the Vancouver Whitecaps. We've got the final set now, Toronto FC, Vancouver Whitecaps. Are you sticking by that prediction?
I don't like to predict the games I'm going to call usually, but...
Tune is changing.
You know what? I think Vancouver, despite their performance against Edmonton last night, is still the more informed team with their back line, with Jaden Merritt back there, having a big year. So I'm going to stick with that prediction. I think... you know, they've shown to the Western Conference and some big results, you know, at home to San Jose that they can compete with some of the best clubs in the league. So no reason for me to change my prediction based on just Toronto's performance last night.
There you go. You got to dance with the one that brung you. Dancing with us on the show today has been Toronto Sun writer Curtis Larson. Kurt, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks, man.
We now bring you to the portion of the show brought to you by our good friends at the ProRail Group. The ProRail Group, putting people first. Also known as...
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about promotion relegation, Jamie. Brought to us by the completely not shadowy or insidious corporate ProRail Group. Grant?
Yes?
Which ProRail Group sponsored thing would you like to bring to us this week?
Stretching my back. Yeah. This ProRail chair I'm in is a little stiff.
I mean,
comfortable.
Grant, you should try some ProRail back rub. The ProRail Group, putting your back first.
Putting backs first.
Grant, who or what would you like
to
promote?
Walking around backwards. Promote something very quickly.
I am going to promote Canada basketball.
You got no notes in front of you. No talking
points.
I
don't have any talking points today. I'm going to promote Canada basketball.
Hashtag support local basketball.
He's freewheeling it.
Yep. For their decision, I guess it was 2 days ago, to make Steve Nash, famous Canadian basketball player, their general manager.
Does that need to be said?
Oh, whatever.
If anyone doesn't know
famous
who he is
Canadian
already.
Famous Canadian basketballer.
Well-known ball bouncer. He needs those peach baskets back.
I'm catering to our global listenership.
Yeah, like anyway. when you called it ice hockey on the Facebook.
That's
group.
The name. It's ice hockey.
All right, Steve Nash.
Okay,
Steve Nash.
Right. So you may be asking, well, now why is Grant promoting a basketball thing instead of a soccer thing?
Come on.
No one's asking that.
I object, Grant. You're leading the witness.
The people from the ProRail Group are eyeing us suspiciously, Grant.
I know. All right, I gotta turn this up here. Okay, so I'm promoting Basketball Canada, and I'm kind of tying it into this whole idea that I just think for them as an organization that faces a lot of the same challenges that soccer does in Canada in terms of fan interest, corporate support,
players deciding to play for Canada.
Right, players deciding to play elsewhere or not play at all, maybe is more so the case in basketball. Anyway, so this move to appoint Steve Nash, I think, is a fantastic move for basketball in Canada, because it will make it that much easier for them to raise sponsorship money, to convince players to play for Canada, yada, 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 all those things we just spoke about. And so maybe this is kind of a promotion with a bit of a warning tied in for Canadian soccer, because even though, you know, whether we want to admit it or not, if you are a team sport in this country and you're not hockey, ice hockey, as I said before.
Because field hockey is also
field hockey
in trouble.
Right. If you're not playing hockey, then you're kind of all, whether it's basketball or baseball or soccer or cricket or rugby, whatever, you're all kind of competing for the same sponsorship dollars, the same fan interest. So anything you can do like that to put a guy in this position to give your sport more exposure and, frankly, credibility is a fantastic move. And I don't really know if Canadian soccer has the same sort of a player they could do the same thing with.
Sandro Grande.
Last spotted playing Division III in Quebec.
Yeah.
I'm going to put my hand up here and say
that you should probably be relegating this, because if they're all competing for the same dollar,
yeah,
well,
this I mean, is that, helping
now basketball
has got a leg up.
Okay. Originally, this was meant to be like a promotion with a warning,
yeah.
But it kind of didn't come out that way when I started talking about it, because I don't have any talking notes.
Grant, I'm worried now that the people at the ProRel group are going to take their money away from us and give it to Canadian
Steve
basketball.
Nash.
Yeah, some Canadian guys talking about basketball down the hall.
Even I can't blame them for that.
It's worth noting that, I mean, we've spoken in the past about how low the CSA's budget is relative to other soccer federations around the world. From what I read, Canada basketball runs on a yearly budget of something like $500,000.
It's not a lot of money.
And I mean, they don't play necessarily as much as the soccer teams might, or I'm not even sure, to be honest with you, but
I like the idea that it's not that they're just kind of poor, it's that they're so poor that they become the Cleveland Indians from Major League, where it's endearing and they've got a plucky spirit. So
yeah.
You don't want to lose
Steve
that.
Nash.
You don't want to just become middling and not very good. You want to be bad enough to be
exciting. I'll finish it off with this. Maybe I can promote it in the sense that if Steve Nash and the guys who hired him at Canada Basketball managed to convince corporate Canada to start sponsoring and throwing money at a sport that isn't hockey, they will follow suit when it comes to soccer.
Okay.
Jamie,
there it is.
Yes.
You said there's no Canadian soccer equivalent of this, and we're missing the obvious. They got a former national team player with connections whose last name is Nash. New GM of Canadian soccer, Martin Nash. It's perfect. It's pre-written for you guys.
Or
just go and make it happen.
Steve Nash could just do both jobs, maybe.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
And
or
Neil
Young.
And Young for the Canadian content, but
exactly,
it doesn't end with Nash.
Or former professional wrestler Kevin Nash, also known as Diesel.
I'm going to take...
Founding member of the New World Order.
Hold on, I got one more.
All right.
Former CBC anchorman, Knowlton Nash.
All right.
Fictional TV character, Nash Bridges.
Oh, definitely Nash Bridges. Oh, man.
I don't have any more Nashes.
The city of Nashville, Tennessee.
What about Johnny Nash? That's Johnny Cash.
I'm gnashing my teeth at that one, Jamie.
All right.
Jamie, who or what would you like to promote?
I am promoting, and you knew this had to come, I'm promoting the Ewood Park Chicken.
You're tying the chicken to the facility rather than the team?
Well, I think the name technically.
It's the Blackburn Chicken.
Yeah, but there's also, because it's the Anfield Cat and, you know, whatever.
Okay, right.
Whatever, the Blackburn Chicken, if you will. This is just an easy one. I mean, Blackburn Rovers fans, very unhappy with the owners of the team, Vankies, this Indian-based company that owns a lot of, you know, frozen chicken, basically. That's their gig. They've kind of done a completely terrible job of owning the team. The team is now officially relegated, and so somebody very cleverly let loose a chicken with a cape on. And it might have been a capon with a capon, to be perfectly fair.
Mmm, tasty.
Yeah. Anyways, onto the field in the game in which they were relegated against Wigan Athletic at home. It ran around. It caused all kinds of to-do and bother, as you imagine a chicken let loose on a soccer pitch would. And it was eventually corralled with a combination of Wigan keeper Ali Alhabsi and Yakubu.
He did a pretty apt job of bundling that thing up.
He bundled it right into the net, but then it went through the net.
Yeah, it went through the net.
And Yakubu got it on the other side.
Ali Alhabsi from Oman, capital of which is?
Muscat.
You could just be making things up at this point.
Well, people at home can Google it.
All right. Go
Gabon.
On.
Gabon. Gabon.
We did this before, and I can't remember Gabon. All right. Okay. But the point of the Ewood chicken is that I think it's actually it's better than the Anfield cat, which is a cat that got out at a Tottenham-Liverpool game at Anfield and just kind of ran around. As confused.
No political message.
See, that's the thing. No message. Same thing with the squirrel that got loose at Loftus Road at a QPR game. Just a freewheeling squirrel.
It's a Bowser-neutral squirrel.
Exactly. And if you're going to cause that kind of problem, if you're going to be a streaker, because, these things didn't have capes on at all, then at least have some kind of message.
There you go.
So there we go.
You may have just figured out a way forward, Jamie, for people in the subculture known as jumping or whatever it is, streaking, running on the field. There are legal things attached to that. You can go to jail. You can face other sanctions. If you want to get a message across, just take a banner that says goldenpalace.com, tie it to a pig or whatever, and let it loose on the field.
That pig had some powerful friends.
Wanted me to cut down on the Simpsons references?
At the 2000 British Open at St. Andrews, I saw a streaker come out and interrupt Tiger Woods' triumphal march up the 18th hole. And she was attractive.
Triumphal march up the 18th hole, Jamie?
Done and done. Moving right along. Squeeze, what do you want to promote?
Don't ever wink at me like that again. I'm going to promote, Jamie, you just spoke about the owners of Blackburn who are gloriously oblivious to reality. I think this came out that they didn't know that relegation existed in the Premier League. They thought the club would just be up there forever.
They clearly don't do business with the Pro Rail Group.
No, they don't, who know everything about everything, and we appreciate their support. I am going to promote another group for their glorious obliviousness and intentional ignorance of reality. That would be fans of Juventus, who are acting as though the club has officially won 30 Scudettos. It has not. It has won 28. It had two stripped from it earlier this decade due to a match-fixing scandal. The fans, though, I'm reading from an article by Brooks Peck over at Dirty Tackle. We hear about a guy named Paolo Di Celi, even I can't pronounce that.
You are of Italian descent. You should be able to pronounce all this.
I butcher a lot of names, not as many
DiCegli.
As Graham. Oh, okay. Well, then, Mr. Di Celi has redone his Jeep with the 3 stars on it, signifying 30 titles. There's a big banner outside the stadium, 30 titles, promoting it as such. And it's just so audacious that in the face of another match-fixing scandal that's coming to light in Italy, not involving Juventus that I know of, but I think it's...
It's mostly Serie B.
Yeah, it's all like low-level teams. But the point is that this is a specter that exists not just within soccer as a whole, but specifically within Italian soccer and specifically applying to Juventus, and the fans are just adamant that they do not want to have anything to do with reality. The 30 titles are official, they're real, they're done, they happened. Yes, they happened, but these records only exist insofar as the official bodies deem them to exist. The official bodies do not deem Juventus to have won 30 titles. They have them winning 28.
Like if you just run into the office of the Italian FA and grab the trophy, that doesn't mean you've won. I held it. No matter what you say, I won.
Yeah. I touched it.
Yeah.
And the thing is, 28 is still pretty good.
And they won.
Yeah, that's not half bad.
They went unbeaten. I mean, I imagine within 2 years, there's a very good chance that they will have a legitimate 30.
Yeah, they really have 30. So, and now they've ruined that for themselves.
Well, no, they'll probably just do it again.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not sure what in that is promotion worthy other than promoting the ability for people to stick their fingers in their ears, go la 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 la, pretend that reality doesn't exist, and just proceed as such. As we said earlier, Mitt Romney running for the presidency of the United States. I'll let you make your own logical connection there. Grant?
Yes.
Who or what would you like to relegate?
I am going to relegate another soccer brawl. I quite enjoy searching these out on the internet and spending some time watching them.
Well, wait, you should relegate yourself then as some kind of
voyeur
of people punching each other.
I bundle myself in with this and relegate
In Grant's case, you can't spell voyeur without voyeur.
Hello. So I'm going to the brawl I'm relegating this week, I've got it, I put it up on our Facebook page after great difficulty this morning. I think I posted it about 7 times and finally got the link working, so I apologize if that cluttered anybody's feed.
God, I don't like how you said that.
Grant is relegating himself for cluttering everybody's feed.
So this brawl in particular involves two teams from Uruguay. It is Cerro and Cerro Largo.
And they
what are you looking at me for? Yeah. Damn you, Cero Largo. Hate
so
them.
Go to the Some Canadian Guys Facebook page. The link is on there working properly now. Check it out. It's about 5 minutes, and it is worthy of 5 minutes of your time. Trust me. It is a broad-ranging, slow-moving. I mean, it involves all the players. You've got riot police. You've got fans. It's sort of like the mob slowly moves around the entire pitch and then goes into the tunnel. You've got haymakers. You've got drop kicks. It's just a madhouse.
I think broad-ranging and slow-moving describes this promotion relegation segment today.
Does anybody hit anyone with a chair? Does anybody come off the top rope?
Does Kevin Nash show up and smack anyone with the Intercontinental belt?
Chairs. There was a lot. Like, the riot police seemed to be sort of cornering. Rather than breaking the fight up, they just sort of, like, blocked it off. So the player, it's just like a dust ball you'd see on the cartoons or something.
It's like these pig pen.
All right.
It's really quite fascinating.
I don't quite understand why you relegated
it
and then proceeded to say how much you like it.
I've kind of got sort of an opposite thing. You know, the thing I promoted today, I maybe should have relegated and vice versa. So whatever.
Yeah, backward, not forward. Downward, not upward. Yeah. Swirling away from freedom. Jamie,
yes.
As this episode quickly swirls away, what would you like to relegate?
I'm relegating something that we touched on earlier. 2015 in Canadian soccer will be a pretty big year. Yep. Women's World Cup. Pan Am Games. But the thing is that Toronto, and more specifically, the Canadian National Stadium, aka BMO Field, will have no games for any of them. It came out that the Pan Am Games, all the soccer is going to be held in Hamilton, which is obviously not far away, but it's not the National Stadium, it's not BMO Field, and the Women's World Cup, as we mentioned earlier, nothing to do with Toronto, not the CSA's fault, Toronto's fault. But the thing is, like, why do we have a national stadium paid for, in part by taxpayers, specifically to be the national stadium of our national teams, and we're not going to use it for them? I know a lot of people right now, especially on the West Coast, are all, World Cup qualifying, angry. But, I mean, the thing is, when you get an international, it's like, imagine, and this is obviously a bit of a comparison that I'm making here, but England gets the World Cup and just doesn't bother to have a game at Wembley. I mean, it's the raison d'etre, in part, of that stadium, and they just kind of ignored it.
Not really a direct analogy, though.
Just let me go here. I'm on a roll. You'd think at least the Pan Am Games being hosted in Toronto would get the soccer at the soccer stadium in Toronto. But
well, I don't know. Maybe Toronto FC will have a number of friendlies that year in the summer against Chelsea, Man United, Barcelona, Real Madrid.
Maybe,
there'll be
maybe against
games
Juventus.
Of the summer. Games, yeah, and Juventus, who they'll will have their 30 titles by then, or 32, depending on
who
you
ask. Do
we
know if BMO Field is going to be used for anything during the Pan Am Games? Because it's not suitable
That's
for
a good
anything
question.
Else.
Yeah, I don't know. Is there field
it
hockey?
It won't be used for anything. It'll probably be demolished by then because Toronto FC will have relocated to Albuquerque by that point. And there just won't be any reason
for
it.
You know they'll be in Fort McMurray.
Yeah, that's it.
We'll buy them and rename them the Oil Barons.
Albuquerque FC.
You heard it here first. We are buying Toronto FC and relocating them to Fort McMurray. What am I going to relegate? I am going to relegate a proposition made by the folks at the Guatemalan Football Association or Federation or whatever they're called. Grant, you forwarded me this article because you spend an inordinate amount of time reading Spanish language articles.
And watching soccer brawls.
This is from goal.com and it is run through the rudimentary Google Translate.
Google Translate's getting a lot better, though, to be fair.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't replace a person with a machine unless...
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good that the three of us will be replaced by machines soon enough. Anyway, this is from goal.com. The Guatemalan Federation requested the hiring of South American referees for World Cup qualifiers, transcendent. Don't know why that word's in there.
Gotta have it.
In the CONCACAF Congress that will take place in Panama City, the idea of slippers leaders has to do with the hassle of other processes of CONCACAF qualifiers who have gone through arbitration proceedings, criticized and crucial to the resolution of the games. The point of this, I guess, is that Guatemala, who is, of course, in the third round of CONCACAF qualifying this summer, wants South American referees to do the officiating rather than CONCACAF referees because they believe, I guess, that they are better equipped to make the important decisions. What I will point out here, and I don't want to, you know, poke this hornet's nest too much, but Guatemala is in a group with the USA, Jamaica, and Antigua and Barbuda. And my contention would be that Guatemala would be making this proposal not out of an earnest interest in the good of the game and ensuring the highest level of officiating possible, but perhaps to try and ensure that the officials they receive in these games might be more conducive to the style of play that they may choose to utilize against the USA, Jamaica, and Antigua and Barbuda, three teams that might utilize a different style of play.
Winking heavily, yes. Squizzes, as he says this.
Although it could be completely possible that Guatemala is just interested in the good of the game and they want South American officials who might have higher, experience at higher levels to come in and officiate these games. But I don't know.
CONCACAF officiating is generally kind of wonky.
Everybody says that about every league and every competition everywhere. You go to
That's
anywhere,
true,
you know.
But I mean, we all know that CONCACAF officiating is probably amongst the worst. I don't know what Oceania is like. We say that
because our team, the team that we cheer for, is at the receiving end of crappy calls sometimes. Every team receives crappy calls. CONCACAF, we say, well, CONCACAF refs must be crap. But everyone says these refs, for us to say CONCACAF refs are crap, you're saying that there are some other refs somewhere else
that exist that are great.
But you look at
European refs are generally.
Then why does every referee standard. In every game in the World Cup or the Euro Cup or the Champions League get the same amount of stick? You know, like Howard Webb.
Everyone likes to be mad.
Howard Webb, given the duty of officiating the World Cup final, obviously to be put in that position, you would think that he must be one of the best referees in the world. Did he perhaps make decisions in that game that weren't correct? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's a matter of opinion. But to say, for people to come out and say, well, he's obviously completely incompetent. If we're saying that about the guy who's hosting or refereeing the World Cup final, what possible difference does it make? I think it also has something to do
with the fact that in Central America, again, and this happens all over the world, but you have this kind of cluster of countries that like sort of bitterly have these, well, I don't want to say hate each other, but have these sort of long-standing opinions or they've convinced themselves that they're all sort of trying to screw each other. And when you have I think what I get from this is that Guatemala would just prefer to have none of these, the referees from a completely different region. So it can't be like, oh, this Honduran ref screwed us because, Honduras wants to screw us, blah, blah, blah.
I don't think I really articulated that well.
I know what you mean.
Just to sort of make it completely sort of.
Honduras is too busy screwing Canada. They don't have any time to screw Guatemala. Anyway, that's going to bring us to the last part of the show, which is Taste the Trivia, weekly trivia challenge, where the questions and the answers are given to you. Damn it, how did I screw up that part? Given to us by you, the listeners. Anyway, trivia challenge. You get the idea. Last week, question was, who was the youngest player to earn a cap for the Canadian Women's National Senior Team, and how old was she? The answer, of course, Carl Lang at age 15. Answer given to us by Seth Greenan, who has given us this week's question, which is the only country to have defeated our senior men's national team and senior women's national team on every occasion they've played? This is similar to a question we had once before, but not the same. If you have the correct answer, head over to our aforementioned Facebook page at facebook.com/somecanadianguys. If you're the first one to provide the correct answer there, you'll be the winner of this week's Taste the Trivia. We are in the process of getting some new swag, so hopefully you'll get some of that eventually. Mm-hmm. But what you definitely will get is a shout-out on next week's show and the chance to provide the question for that episode of the show.
Get a shout-out and a big up and a,
Yeah,
high five.
And some Bowser neutrality.
Yeah.
Very quickly, gentlemen. Grant, what are you? What have you got in the works over at Canadian Soccer News?
I'm planning to do sort of a look at the players we can expect to see playing for Canada in the upcoming World Cup qualifiers, and just sort of looking back at the season they have had so far, wherever it is they may be playing.
All right, long balls, Jamie. You got anything in the horizon over at Sportsnet.ca?
We are working up a preview to the Euro that's coming up this summer, and also to Canada's World Cup qualifying. I'm going to say kerfuffle.
All right, that is a wonderful word to use. Of course, if you are able to get tickets or if you were able to get to the games, go and buy your tickets for World Cup qualifying. If you can't make it, send a deserving kid in your place. The details are over at the Voyageurs website, cansoc.org. While you're on the internet, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes and follow the lot of us on Twitter. Grant, where can people find you?
You can find me at SCG Grant.
And you, Jamie?
Oh, I'm just yawning for a second here. Let me.
The professionalism never stops.
Doyle underscore Jamie.
You can find me at Daniel Squizzato, DanielSquizzato, spelling provided for Jamie and by the good folks of the ProRail Group. We'll be hammering at you again next week. Till then, we are, as always, some Canadian guys talking about soccer.